Welcome back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. This week is a banger. Octeel comes on and talks through all things toys and really the background of his life and how he got to this point, through some low points, through some high points, until we got Kaiju Creamy and things like that. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, subscribe, rate, review, wherever you get podcasts. You can follow us on all socials at Toys on Tap. And if you want to support the show even more, you can go on patreon.com/toysontap. You'll get video interviews, which I'm still catching up on. You'll get episodes of the Nitty Gritty and all kinds of good stuff. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. Look at that. Is that all those? Are those just what is that behind you? Like just collection of all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, it's all kinds of shit.
Jeez.
Stuff. So I'm in my paint studio right now.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, pins and keychains and, you know, just knickknacks, things my daughters have drawn for me, things people have sent me, flyers from shows.
I gotta tell you, like, I'm in love right now. The fact that you are holding a dog while we're doing the interview, I love my dogs so much. So this is perfect,
dude. She has a bed in my paint room, and she'll just lay in here like all day. And like my daughters are at my ex's right now, so it's, you know, it's just me and her. So she's like, she's not gonna go upstairs without me, you know. So she may be on my lap half the time, but. She's pretty chill.
Dude, cool. I'm pumped. I'm really pumped to have you on. Like, I've met you twice at designer cons, and 2 years ago I tried to like figure out how to get you on, and then this year we solidified it, and now you're here.
Yeah.
It takes 2 years sometimes, but it's worth it.
Yeah. I think so. I've actually been doing a lot of interviews and things lately. I don't know why it's all of a sudden, but it's just kind of coming from all kinds of different angles all at the same time. You know, I guess that's
they heard that we wanted you, so they all wanted you. I get it. Sometimes it rarely happens, but we get artists that like are in both art mediums of tattooing and toys. And I think you're the third one I've had on that plays both. And my best friend's a tattoo artist. And so I know like, that side is already so crazy creatively.
Yeah.
And then you also now are in the toy game and doing that kind of stuff and going to designer con. And so it adds a whole nother craziness that I want to dive into all of that.
Yeah.
So I hope you're ready.
I'm ready.
All right. Before we do anything, please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, what you do.
My name is Matt McCree. I'm also known as Octeel. I am a tattoo artist, designer, toy painter, toy maker, jack of all trades.
All of it.
Oh, everything. I want to do it all.
Can we start at the name, Octeel? Tell me about that name.
The name Octeel has a pretty long history. Maybe goes back to like 2006, 2007. Yeah. And at that time, I was DJing, like had my own DJ show, like all vinyl, like on the weekends. And a friend of mine owned a restaurant. He's like, I want you to DJ in my restaurant for an event.
Yeah.
And I was DJing under the name Mass Dope. And he's like, I can't put out an email blast to like, you know, my clients with this name Mass Dope. He's like, it just sounds crazy. And I was like, yeah. So at that time, you know, the person I was dating was like, well, you're always eating sushi. We're always going out for sushi. You're always eating octopus and eel, like Octeel. It's like, that's what it comes from. It just comes from octopus and eel. And, you know, at that time I was like in the early stages of my tattooing career. And I was, it was just kind of like, it was really popular for tattoo artists to use aliases also,
yeah,
you know, or art names, you know, as you tell people, you know, if you start tattooing and you're not that good, Yeah. You want to have a name you can just get rid of and not attach to your real name, you know? It's like, so if you get good in like 5 years, it's like, oh, now I'm, you know, Matt McCree or whatever. So I used it as a DJ name at like one event, and then I just started signing all my artwork, Octeal, probably in around like 2008. Mm-hmm. And that was like my first official year of like full-time tattooing. So I just kind of kept it. And I think with the advancements of social media and the progression of the internet, you know, it's just, I just never got rid of it. I don't like using my name for anything. I don't know. It's like I have a weird attachment to my name and my artwork.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting more comfortable with it, but.
I mean, the alias is cool, so that, leave it there. I mean, you can just switch your name entirely. We walk it back to, for every artist, like all the way back to the beginning. I know that for you, Godzilla plays a fun part in being your favorite kaiju and your favorite, like, and so walk it back all the way when you're a kid and the toys that you're playing with. Tell me about that stuff. And does Godzilla kind of start there, or does he come a little later?
No, he starts there. Okay. I mean, I was born December 1979.
Yeah.
I grew up in the heyday of He-Man and G.I. Joe and Nintendo. I mean, I was 6 years old when Nintendo came out, you know. Mm-hmm. I remember all that shit, man. Like, you would just go to a toy store and it was just like aisles of, you know, it's like, it wasn't like three He-Man, it was like 40 He-Man, you know. Yeah. Like, they were cranking that stuff out, you know, mid 80s, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and, you know, a lot of James Grohman stuff, you know. Yeah. Like Madballs, and, you know, all that stuff was coming out all that same time, you know. It was just, you know, think about now, like, man, that was just insane. It was phenomenal. But I have a twin sister, and my grandmother would often watch me and my twin sister, like, my mother, you know, was working, or, you know, need time off or something. And I want to say it was like my grandma first introduced me to Godzilla, but she bought me my first Godzilla VHS. She bought me Godzilla versus the Sea Monster.
Yeah.
And I still have it. I still have the original one she bought me. And I had to have been like maybe 7, 8 years old at the time. And I just remember, you know, always wanting to watch it, always wanting to watch Godzilla films. Sometimes I would catch something on, like, you know, TBS or like a local network, cable network, like on a Sunday or something, right? Like Sunday afternoon is like Godzilla versus Megalon would come on or something random. But the only one I could watch is Godzilla versus Sea Monster. My grandma would always just come in, sit in and watch it with me.
Yeah.
And she was really the only person that would watch it with me, which is, you know, now I think about it, it's kind of funny, but, so for a long point in my life, like whenever I thought about Godzilla, you know, I thought about my grandma, which is kind of, I mean, she was like, she was like the nicest person in the world, but it was just like, I had that love for her. And I really fell in love with Godzilla. And
yeah.
That's about when it started. You know, I don't ever feel like I really ever, you know, went through a point where I didn't like Godzilla.
Yeah. But
obviously, yeah, I went through many years of growing up and trying to become an adult where I was just not tied into Godzilla and toys and, you know, that sort of thing anymore.
Yeah. I grew up with the worst Godzilla. I was born 1990, so the first one I saw was the one that came out in 2000 with like Matthew Broderick.
Godzilla 98.
Yeah, and it's it feels like Godzilla's smaller in that movie and skinnier and just like he's a weird looking monster. Yeah.
He looks like an iguana.
Then to have like see the other toys that were out or like see like Godzilla minus one, and it's like that, if I would have grown up with that.
Godzilla!
It looks like Godzilla, but due to international copyright laws, it's not.
Still, we should run like it is Godzilla!
Though it isn't.
The newest kaiju is about to stomp its way onto the scene.
What's that smell?
Meet Barfy. The sludge-spewing kaiju inspired by the lizard we all know and love. Coming from the brain of Bootleg Toy Co. and brought to life by Toys on Tap. This monstrosity will come in at a massive 6 inches in 3 styles. 1 blank white and 2 colorways exclusive to Toys on Tap. The first colorway is Barfy's natural colors. And the second is... That's right, Reptar colorway.
Now that's entertainment!
This monstrosity will arrive in a clear box with a backer that doubles as a backdrop for your figure. Barfy arrives on the scene soon. You don't want to miss this, but remember, stay out of the way of the sludge.
I'm going to change my whole trajectory.
Completely.
But I'm a little jealous that you got to start out with at least Godzilla, where he looks normal like a giant monster.
And I didn't get to see... It was hard to have access to the movies at that time, like coming from Japan. At least, I mean, I'm on the East Coast.
Yeah.
So it wasn't something like, I mean, I didn't know who Ultraman was till I was like 30, right? Like I'd never seen it, didn't know what it was. Unlike a lot of friends I have on the West Coast are like, man, I watched that on Saturday mornings, you know,
yeah.
Like I grew up with this stuff. It was on TV all the time. But definitely like East Coast, like, being a kid, like I didn't have access to a lot of Godzilla films, but I would see, you know, advertisements and stuff on TV or on cable or in magazines. And, you know, I remember the whole Heisei era of Godzilla. Like for me, Godzilla 95, like, man, I was like, that's it, man. He's burning. I was, you know, 15, 16
yeah.
years old when that came out. So that was, for me, that just hit like right at that mark where I was just like, I knew what it was, you know, and I'd kind of grown up with it. So it was just, man, this is amazing. This thing is insane. And then by the time I got to like Godzilla 98, you know, when that came out, I was like, oh, it's the first Godzilla movie in America. I was just like, oh man, what is
it? Yeah, you're like, this what sucks. Yeah.
What is this thing?
It's so crazy. I mean, what's cool too, like, that not only do you have an attachment to it, but you attach it to something that's even more sentimental with like your grandmother and stuff. And so I think it like makes what you're doing now and the stuff that you're doing with Mondo and all that like way more killer that you now get to have like these sentimental parts just come through your life and come into this big event.
I mean, I think, you know, as an artist, I have to have an emotional attachment to something. If I'm not somewhat invested emotionally in a piece or creating a piece, I'm just going to walk away from it. It's for me, it's, you know, I don't want to be like, it's not about money. Like it really isn't about money. You know what I mean? Like to me, that is not everything in life. That is not the grand determiner of success. And I've just been doing art my entire, like since I was a kid. So it's like, I grew up having, you know, first thing I started drawing, painting were my toys.
Yeah.
It was the first thing I ever did. It was like, you know, things that I wanted to play with, things that were sitting in front of me, you know, Super Mario, like characters, like stuff like that. But the first thing I ever drew was, you know, toys. And crazy that now, like, it's taken 40 years to come back to like my life and like, man, I'm making a living doing that. And, you know, I get to do it every day. You know, it's part of something that I love. I get to enjoy it. And it's like, man, you know, I know the 6-year-old me would be so proud. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, man, that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
Man, it's so cool.
I mean, you kind of walk away from toys like most kids do a little bit, and then art kind of picks up, and you're constantly doing that. What's it look like for art as you're starting to move forward? Are you just involved in art classes in school, just constantly drawing?
I mean, I was involved in art to any capacity that I could be involved in art.
Yeah, graffiti, all that stuff.
No, I never got into graffiti, but I mean, just in school, like, you know, high school, it's just like I took every single art class I could. I went to a big high school. They offered electives like, you know, sculpture, photography, jewelry making. They had fashion art. I was like, I took fashion art as an elective. People were like, crazy. Why? You know, and it was like, what? I designed and made a scarf or something. Mm-hmm. I was the only dude in there. Yeah. I was the only dude in the class, but I was just like, man, I'd rather be doing something creative and artistic than taking another, study hall or something like that. I'd rather, you know, keep myself in this creative mode. So I took everything that I could possibly take. I didn't want to go to college, but, you know, I applied to a bunch of art schools, got into all the art schools that I wanted to. I ended up getting a really nice scholarship to go to Columbus College of Art mm-hmm. in Columbus, Ohio. And I went there, you know, for my first year. And man, that school is amazing and brutal. And it really just kind of like leveled the playing field. You know, before that, I'd only ever been exposed to artists at high school level, right?
Yeah.
Like, what's the longest you're doing art? 40 minutes in a class, you know? Maybe drawing on my own, you know, and it's like, man, I'm going into 3-hour classes, 3-hour drawing classes. And they're like, draw a cube for 3 hours, no shading. And it's just like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so it was like, it was a little bit like, you know, boot camp that, you know, that first semester for, as an artist, like just exposed to things I'd never been exposed to. And, I'll say my head wasn't in it. My heart probably wasn't in it because mm-hmm. I was a little bit of a realist. I'm like, you know, I don't want to go into teaching and I don't want to, you know, do art history and I don't want to work in a gallery. I want to be an artist, you know, but I knew that, you know, I wasn't just going to get hired straight out of college. Somebody wasn't just going to slap all this money down and be like, pay me a picture, draw yeah. me this thing. That doesn't happen. I mean, there's too many. So many people going to school for that, but it's like, what's the reality of that too, you know? So I felt a little frustrated with that. I felt like, you know, the cost of school for an artist should be comparable to your chances of getting a job, which means, yeah. like, bro, I should be paying $20 a semester.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, that's a hard thing to reconcile to really come to grips with. Like, you see people that struggle through art school and they are just pushing and pushing and pushing, hoping to be an artist on the other side that's famous or they can sell or make money or whatever. So after year one, what'd you do?
I transferred to a school back in my home state.
Okay.
One, because I was dating a girl from my home state.
The worst.
two, because half of my friends from high school ended up going to that state school. And I was so far ahead as far as art classes go that I knew I would get into the school. I knew that they would pick all my classes up as electives.
Yeah.
And they did. So, you know, I was basically considered almost a junior as far as art classes, but I was considered a freshman as far as like liberal arts, you know. And yeah. I was like taking math classes and I was like, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had a good record collection. I was, you know, just DJing in my room and scratching records and stuff. And I met up with these two kids that they're like, hey, you want to come jam with us? One was a drummer, one was a bass player. I was like, yeah, let's start a band. So we started a band. And, you know, after my second year of school, I ended up quitting mm-hmm. and just being in a band and, you know, stayed on campus, worked whatever jobs I could to scrape by money. I painted houses,
Yeah.
I, you know, worked in warehouses. I swept floors, like anything I could do to stay up there. And then, you know, just be in a band and like practice all week and do shows every weekend. And we opened for Goldfinger one time on our campus. Like that was like big deal, you know?
Yeah.
So I did that. So it was like, by that point, I was still drawing, like I was still drawing through all of this. I was still doing art. And I will say, you know, as many twists and turns as my life has taken, like, even when I was the brokest broke, I was still drawing, you know, I was still making art, you know? So that's kind of always just been a vein that's just kind of carried me. Always knew I was going to continue to do art no matter what. I just didn't know where I was really going to land, you know? And eventually my band, you know, I went my separate ways because I was just like, I don't see this kind of panning out eventually, you know? Half the guys were in school. Some of the guys weren't, you know, that's going to dictate a lot, you know? Like you can't go on tour and you can't do this and you can't drive up and down the East Coast playing bars if half your bandmates want to be in school.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt like we were at the point where it's like, we probably could have just kind of gotten bigger, but like that was the kind of stone wall to kind of stop it for me, you know?
Yeah. Did they go on to do something when you left?
They went on, I think, to play for a couple of years, still play around campus and stuff. I think they ended up recording an album, but like not like record label or anything, just recording an album. And actually in a studio, because when I was with the band, we were just recording stuff at Empire Blister.
Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 3.75 inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsor Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
Friends' houses or whoever had equipment, like whatever we could do, you know?
Yeah.
So that was that. And I kind of moved back home with my mom, you know, tail between my legs. And
yeah,
you know, I don't know how old I was at this point, early 20s, but I was like, I guess it's time to grow up.
Yeah.
And get a real job. You know, and everybody's like, oh, you had your fun. You tried to be an artist. You tried to be in a band. Didn't work out. You need insurance. You need a 401k.
Yeah. Why is insurance always the first thing, too? It's always like, you need it.
You need a car.
Yeah. It's like, maybe not.
I mean, I need it now because I'm falling apart, but like, I didn't need it when I was 22.
Right.
So I got a job working in a warehouse, driving fork trucks, you know.
Worst.
It's like, I was making $12 an hour. I was making, you know, decent money.
Wait, you said driving a forklift?
Yeah.
That's wild. Like, my best friend that's the tattoo artist, that's how he started too. You guys, that's too much.
Dude, I was working. Well, you know, here's the thing, right? Like by this point, I had some piercings.
Yeah.
I had, you know, tattoos, or the onset of tattoos. And I was like, I want a job where people are just going to leave me alone. You know, like nobody's going to tell me how I have to look or, you know, what I need to do. Like they can just say, hey, go load this truck or go pack these boxes.
Yeah.
And, you know, it satisfied that need and it satisfied the need to like, hey, like my parents were proud. Like, look, you have insurance. You can, you know, make some money. You can buy a car. And dude, I was miserable.
Yeah.
Like, Like, I was, I wanted to die, bro. Like,
yeah,
it was awful, but like, I was giving it a go. Like, you know, since I was a kid, like, you know, grownups always say, oh, you'll understand when you get older. And, mm-hmm. you know, this, you know, you can't make money being an artist. It should only be a hobby. And, you know, this was my real first go as, you know, a young adult saying, okay, like, I'm going to do everything they say. I'm going to do, you know, I've kind of done my own thing, but like, I'm going to do exactly what everybody says, mm-hmm. like what society is telling me I should do. I'm going to cut my hair. I'm going to do all these things and we're going to see what happens. And I absolutely had money in my bank account. I absolutely had insurance and a 401k, you know, but I was miserable, bro. Like, yeah. I was miserable.
You're still drawing in the midst of this, I'm assuming.
I was still drawing.
Yeah. So how are we, I mean, art shifts drastically based off your own emotions and stuff. And so as we take a darker turn down this, I mean, you're miserable at work.
Yeah. I mean,
what are you drawing?
I'm doing pen and ink drawings, a lot of just ballpoint pen stuff. I'm doing stuff that takes 50 hours, 100 hours. You know, I'm doing these big drawings, maybe this big, maybe it's 200 hour drawing. And I'm basically like just sitting in coffee shops and stuff, you know, like on the weekends. I used to go sit at a Starbucks and buy a drink and sit there for 8 hours on a Sunday or something. And, you know, kind of do a drawing and all of that. So, man, eventually I had money. So I was like, I'm going to start getting tattooed.
Yeah.
And I did. And I remember the guy that did my first tattoo and I really liked him and I sought him back out and I went and got tattooed by him. And then, you know, at that time we started talking, he said, oh, I remember you, you know, like you're an artist too. You went to art school and stuff. I said, yeah. And he said, hey, you want to come hang out? Like we can do some sketching at my house and stuff. And so I would do that. Like I went and got a couple tattoos from him and started, you know, drawing with him, just hanging out. And there's kind of this weird cross section where it was like, man, I'm trying to remember. I had an injury or something. I ended up injuring my ankle and I was like on crutches or something and I couldn't go back to work. Mm-hmm. And I was off for a brief amount of time and he messaged me and was like, yo, I have a opportunity for you. You know, I want you to come down to the shop, tell the owners you want to be the shop boy, you know, work a couple hours a week. And I was
crazy
like,
name. Yeah.
I was like, bro, I'm making, why? Like, you know, at this time it's like tattooing hadn't really blown up. It definitely wasn't accepted in public yet. Mm-hmm. The stars, Miami, you know, like the TV shows, Miami Ink and all that stuff, that was just starting. So, you know, I love tattoos, but I didn't have this desire to be like, yes, I'm gonna be amazing tattooer and all this. Like, no, dude, it felt daunting.
Yeah.
but he invited me down and I showed the owner, you know, he let me be a shop guy. So I was doing that while I had, you know, my 2 weeks off. I was cleaning up around the shop and he told the owners that I could draw and stuff. And eventually they saw my artwork and they said, yeah, hey, we're gonna, you know, let him apprentice you. But, you know, there's some conditions your apprenticeship is. One is like, you can't work someplace else, you know? So like, you're going to be apprentice. You're not gonna have time to have a full-time job at a warehouse.
Yeah.
That's 40 minutes away. Right. So I said, all right. So I said, I got to think about what I want to do. And I went home and I told my mom, I was like, look, I'm going to apprentice to be a tattoo artist. Cause like, you know, at least I would be using my art skills, right? Like, I knew I could fucking draw.
Yeah.
You know, so I just need the training. Once I can tattoo, like at least I'll make a living off of my skill set. And I like tattoos, right? And My mom was just not into it. And she's like, you can't live here if you're going to be a tattoo artist.
Wild.
And so I called the dude that was apprenticing me and I was like, look, like, what do I do? And he was like, dude, pack your stuff. And I'll be up there in like an hour and a half with a truck. And you can come live with me. Like, bro.
So...
I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. I lived in his attic and apprenticed. And, you know, I kind of went through a phase where it's like, I wasn't talking to my mom. And
yeah,
I was just kind of, you know, living in the shop life, you know. And, there's lots of stories that go with that, but we'll fast forward. Eventually, you know, I left my apprenticeship after several months. And, you know, there are reasons for that. Like, I'm not really going to discuss it.
Yeah.
But I end up leaving and just living out of my car, you know. And I did that for like 3 weeks.
It's a long time.
Living out of my car and sleeping in a sleeping bag if it was cold at night. And, you know, but I started putting in applications, all these places, any job I could find, any job I could take. And eventually I went back to the warehouse that I originally left.
Mm-hmm.
And the dude who was my manager had moved up in the company since I had left, because it had been a while. And he was like, hey, you were always a good worker. I had no problems with you. I'll hire you kind of on the spot, as long as, like, you know, I run things by everybody and they approve, and I'll start you at your old wages. And so I did. I was back in the warehouse, and man, I want to say.
You moved back home?
No.
Okay.
Ended up getting an apartment. Like, this dude ended up helping me. My dad ended up helping me. I ended up getting a roommate and was able to have an apartment. So
yeah,
I started back in the warehouse, back on my insurance. Back with the 401k, bro.
Yeah.
And kind of the same thing kind of happened all over again. I, at this point, I was really depressed. I was older. And I started drinking a lot. And I was drinking, you know, I had a crew of friends that, you know, they were in their 20s. They hated their jobs. We were all working good jobs. We were all making money. We were all drinking six nights a week, you know. We were drinking pretty heavy, and you know, it got to a point where that kind of led me into, you know, even though I'm doing this, like, I need to seek more creative external output. And yeah, again, I was drawing and doing art through all this time. So around that time, I started doing some art, like group shows around the city. And ended up meeting the owner of this restaurant and lounge in like a small town, just like right north of Pittsburgh. And he was super into vinyl. And I was like, oh, I have a big vinyl collection. I used to collect, you know, back from my Columbus days. And he's like, well, I have this lounge. We don't do anything on Sundays. You want to come down here once a week and just play tunes? Invite your friends and all this stuff. So we did, and that's how I started DJing, right? So it was like, oh man, I was like back into DJing. Back into all this stuff.
Yeah. No insurance, no 401k.
Well, I did. I was still working at the warehouse, but I started doing the DJing thing on the side, right? And eventually what happened was at the warehouse, you know, in the summers, so I worked there for about 3 years at this point. And in the summers, they would hire these you know, volunteer temp workers, these 18-year-old kids from home from college, paying good wages. And these kids are all just like going out and getting tattooed every weekend and getting drunk every weekend. But I was drawing on my lunch breaks. Sometimes I want to eat, I would draw. Somebody said, "Hey, didn't you used to work in a tattoo shop?" And I said, "Yeah, I did." And they said, "Well, hey, would you design me a tattoo?" I said, "Tell me what you want."
All right.
And I said, "Give me $40. I'll give you something at the end of the lunch break. You know, just give me $20. Give me $40, whatever." So I started doing that, you know, and like these kids would come back after the weekend was over. They show me their, "Oh, check out the, I got this tattoo, it's your design." They're like, "Yeah, that's cool." You know, like I literally, when I left my tattoo apprenticeship, like I didn't want to have anything to do with tattooing again. You know, I was like,
yeah,
I don't want to be in the industry. I don't want a tattoo. So after a couple weeks of this, you know, one of the kids is like, "Hey, look, you're a better artist than my tattoo artist." I was like, "Yeah, I can tell because your tattoos are coming back, you know,
yeah,
looking like whatever." And he's like, "I want you to tattoo me." And I was just like, "No." And for whatever reason, he kind of wouldn't let it go. He was just like, I really think you can do it. Like, I think you're talented. And so eventually I was like, "Man, look." He's like, "You still have your equipment, right?" I was like, "Yeah." I was like, "Look, I'm going to go home." And I was like, "I'm going to tattoo myself." And I was like, "I'm just going to start with the line work." I was like, "I'm going to come in here and show you tomorrow. And if you look at this tattoo and you say, I want you to do it," I was like, "I'll do your tattoo."
And that's a ballsy thing to be doing to yourself.
I did. So when I went home, you know, I think I had a friend that was trying to apprentice at the time, and he'd come over and hang out. So he was there, you know, the girl I was dating at the time. And I just slapped this huge design on the top of my thigh and start lining it.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, "Why aren't you doing something small? Like, start with something small." And I was like, "Look, if I can't figure out how to tattoo by the end of this big thing, right? Like, I shouldn't be tattooing anybody." Yeah. That was my idea. And so I think it took 5 hours to line this thing out, you know. And by the time I was done, I was like, "I think I could do it." So I went into work the next day. I wore shorts. So I showed him my leg. He's like, "Yeah, let's do it this weekend." So that got the ball rolling. Because like even at the end of my apprenticeship, I had never really tattooed anybody. I'd maybe done one or two little tattoos, you know, but I hadn't really tattooed. And so I started, once my friends knew and other people in the warehouse knew, I was tattooing my friends and people from the warehouse on the weekends. And I would say, "Hey, just, you know, just throw me some money for supplies or throw me some money for a new machine," because I was making money at the warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And then after about, you know, 6 months, I want to say, of just doing that on the weekends, I was like, "I can make same amount of money doing this."
Mm-hmm.
So I went part-time at my job and was tattooing part-time by that point.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this.
Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet.
Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
And then eventually I quit my job and was just trying to tattoo out of my apartment for a little bit. And I was doing good. I was making money. I didn't have any problems, but I knew in the back of my head, like, okay, if I'm really going to make a career out of this and I'm really going to get better, like, I can't do that on my own. I need to be in a shop setting. I need to be in a setting where I'm exposed to this and I'm doing this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point while I was doing this, I called up the guys that I apprenticed under, and I told him, hey, I want you to know I'm tattooing. Just in case you see something or somebody tells you I'm tattooing, I don't want you coming down here and causing a ruckus or breaking my hands or
yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, whatever, you know. And then so eventually they called me and they were like, hey, bring your portfolio up. We're thinking about opening a new shop. And if we like what we see, we'll give you a job.
Okay.
And that was in 2008, I think, maybe fall or September of 2008.
And you got that job?
And I got that job.
Okay.
And the shop I worked at was an hour and a half from where I lived.
Jeez. So
I had to drive an hour and a half one way. But I was just like, this is the only opportunity I have. These guys are willing to give me a job as long as I can make enough money to sustain it and make it worth it. I'm going to go for it. And I mean, I took the risk and I did. And I have been tattooing ever since. So
yeah. I mean, that drive is crazy. Hour and a half. I get pissed if I have to drive any more than 20 minutes. So
me too.
Yeah. So that's crazy. I mean, you're tattooing, and like to the punk rock nature of doing it out of your house is amazing. And then moving into a studio where you're now having to be creative at all this point. Tell me about the shift in mental health once you moved to tattooing.
You know, I'd like to tell you it was quick, but it wasn't. It was a slow shift. You know, I did get a lot of kickback and pushback again from my family.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel good about my tattooing at that point. I mean, I was okay. I mean, bottom of the barrel, okay. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't destroying people. But
yeah.
But I was an accomplished artist. I was a well-seasoned artist. I could draw circles around, you know, all these dudes. But like, I couldn't really tattoo. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was always my biggest problem early on in tattooing, was just that people saw what I could produce and draw. And my skill level was not able to meet that expectation.
Yeah.
And I think for me, my only goal was that, hey, if I draw or paint something, I want to be able to tattoo it exactly how I draw or paint.
Absolutely.
And that completely shifted how I did artwork. Mm-hmm. So I was no longer doing these high detail pen and ink drawings. I can show you this. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but like, this is the style of stuff that I used to do.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
That's rad. How old is that one?
This I just did maybe like 2 years ago.
Okay.
This was at the first decon you met me at.
Awesome.
I think I had this there. But so, I mean, this is the first time I've done it in years, but this is the style of stuff I was doing when I went into tattooing. And, you know, at that time, people were like, that's not tattooable. You can't tattoo like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, well, but I loved American traditional tattooing. And yeah. So that really shaped the direction I went in tattooing, because I wanted to make designs that were tattooable, right? Like, somebody comes in and sees that, once I tattooed, I can't do it, you know? But hey, maybe this, you know, Sailor Jerry piece or something like that, you know, like a heart with a dagger, like, hey, I could tattoo that. And so I started just shifting how I did artwork completely towards, you know, things that I thought were tattooable. And then after a couple of years, I kind of met that in the middle, right? Like, my design skills leveled up, my tattoo skills leveled up, and then eventually it kind of synced up where I was like, yeah, I was able to tattoo the things that I was drawing and painting.
Yeah.
And that was really my only goal with tattooing. Like, that was it. Yeah.
I mean, that's an intense drawing. Like, if someone wanted something like that tattooed, that's crazy. Like, where would you even put that on your body? That's wild.
that thing?
Yeah.
Be like your whole bag, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
so, I mean, that's a cool moment of growth. And like, in wisdom early on in tattooing, to know that if I tried to do this, I would destroy people. So I'm not going to do this right now. I'm going to do something else that I am better at, and then like merge those later on. Like, there's so many people in the world that would probably thank you for not damaging them and like saying you could do it and then just destroying them.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, it's like, I am aware that I, you know, in tattooing that I'm doing something that's technically permanent. Yeah. And it's on somebody else, right? Like, as soon as they walk out the door, I may never ever see them again or that tattoo again. Mm-hmm. And that tattoo is going to have its own life with that person, you know. And I think there is some responsibility to, like, yeah, I want to be able to put out the best thing I can for people, you know. And I, to this day, I still feel that way. Like, I don't, I try to never take that for granted, you know. Like, tattooing, you know, in some ways tattooers are put on a pedestal, but in some ways I do think tattooers deserve a much higher praise than is kind of seen or given in society in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that tattooers are just brutally amazing designers and can be. And, you know, again, put a tattooer in any other design world, you know, I'll give you 200 designs in the time somebody might give you 10, you know, because we have to think every single day. We have to design something every single day. We have parameters around designing something every single day, you know, so.
Yeah. I mean, let's take a short pause. What's your favorite tattoo that you have? I mean, you're covered. That's going to be a hard question.
I mean, I try not to put things on me that
I don't like.
And I usually always say, like, the last tattoo I have is my favorite. Because people are always like, what's your favorite tattoo you ever did? Yeah. And I'm always like, the last one I did, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I really like them all. You know, I've been getting tattooed since I was 19 and I'm 45, you know? So I've been getting tattooed over half my life.
Yeah.
At this point. And, you know, I have tattoos for dogs that passed away. I have tattoos for family members. I have tattoos for both my daughters. You know, I have tattoos for spiritual reasons. I have tattoos just because they're fun. I have a Boston cream donut tattooed on me because I love Boston cream donuts.
As you should.
Yeah. Right. So yeah. It's just like, I just kind of like this, right? Like all my knickknacks and tchotchkes and all this stuff. It's like, some of it doesn't even make sense together, but it's like, I just see it all and it makes me happy. And it's like, that's kind of how I feel about, you know, my body and tattoos, kind of like, you know, maybe it's a bit of a roadmap, but I can tell you where I was and who did each tattoo.
Yeah.
And, you know, the experience I had. And I really, at this point, I really love that, you know, yeah. I love that about getting tattoos.
When you were a kid, you started drawing action figures. And then as you started becoming a tattoo artist and drawing and doing stuff more, when did that start merging back into, like, because Godzilla and Kaiju and all those things are beautifully in your tattoos now. When did that kind of like make its way back in?
So, I mean, that can be a long or short story too.
Let's long it up.
Long. you like the long ones?
Yeah.
And it's very, there's a lot of stuff going on in my life. So it's always hard to kind of just dissect what happened in what sequence. But around the pandemic time, we were home. We were all home. We had nothing to do. I couldn't work. I spent a lot of time outside, a lot of time, you know, thinking about what if I never go back to tattooing. A lot of time digging in my basement, looking at old toys and things that I had. And at that time, I had started getting back into collecting. And before that, I hadn't really collected since I was a kid. I hadn't collected any toys or anything. And so I started finding collectors groups and seeing people's, you know, YouTube shows. And one was Attack Peter. Mm. He was doing a, I don't know if he was weekly or monthly. I don't remember what, how often I watched him back then, but, you know, he started popping up. I started seeing, you know, his YouTube show and being exposed to that. And I started being exposed to these online toy groups. And I ended up with a pinched nerve. Mm-hmm. And so we, coming out of the 3 months of having off, we went back into tattooing, and I ended up with a pinched nerve. And so maybe we're approaching, trying to think exactly when this was, but maybe I'd gone back to work, and then maybe 2020, early 2021, somewhere in there. I ended up with a pinched nerve, and I was having problems holding my tattoo machine.
Damn.
I couldn't even grip my tattoo machine. It was falling on my hand as I'm white knuckling it. You know?
Yeah.
I didn't know what to do. And it was the first time in my mind, I was just like, my career is over. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought I had another 15, 20 years tattooing in me. Like, my career is done. And so I was kind of like going through some rehab for that and, you know, thinking about that type of stuff and, you know, collecting toys and stuff like that. And one of my daughters was like, hey, there's a new Godzilla vs. Kong movie just came out. And she goes, Dad, you love Godzilla. You know, let's watch it. And I was like, okay. And I was like, man, I don't like this movie at all.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a Kong, not really a Kong fan myself. But so then, like, the next day, I was like, hey, I'm going to show you the Godzilla films I used to watch, right? Like, they were all up on HBO, all the old Showa stuff, right? I was like, I used to watch this as a kid. You guys will like this, you know?
Yeah.
So we started watching those, you know, and as we'd watch one a day or whatever. And as we're watching them, I was like, I should be drawing tattoo flash of this stuff. So I drew like my first sheet of Godzilla, just some Godzilla heads from some of the films. And I posted it online, and somebody was like, why are you posting? Nobody's going to get that stuff tattooed. Like, why are you posting that? You know? And I was booked out at the time. I was booked out like 6 months tattooing. And I was just kind of like taking a break because of my arm.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave. Go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys.
We talk about old toys.
And new toys.
And toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who knows?
You gotta check it out.
Toy Rats. YouTube.
Bye.
And I posted that first piece of flash, and Attack Peter messaged me. And I'd never even talked to him. And he messaged me and said, man, I love what you're doing. It's amazing. I love tattoos. I love, you know, kaiju stuff. You should keep doing this. Like, that was like all he said. And I was just like, man, somebody likes this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, fans like this stuff, you know? Like, I've never tattooed a Godzilla, and I've always wanted to. So I'm just going to keep drawing this stuff. Well, I started drawing quite a bit of it. And then at that point, I was going through a separation with my daughter's mother. We started a separation at that point. And I couldn't sleep. I was having panic attacks. I was sleeping 2 hours a night. I didn't know what to do with myself. I was like, okay, now I can't tattoo. I'm losing my family. I may not be, you know, living in my house. I don't have a career anymore. Like, what am I going to do? You know? So I started drawing flash like every night. If I was awake, I'd go downstairs and I'd draw flash. and I became kind of obsessed with it. And at this point, now I'm obsessively drawing Kaiju Flash. I'm also starting, well, I'm just going to start collecting heavy. I'm going to collect heavy.
Yeah.
I was like, this is the stuff that I'm drawing. I need references for it, right? Like,
yeah.
Let's start getting into this stuff.
Hell yeah.
You know, and that's when I really started getting into Sofubi. And lo and behold, people started, because my schedule was like booked out a couple months, people started scheduling for that Kaiju stuff. And this was like over the course of the summer. And I was like, man, this is cool. Like, people are actually wanting to do it. And so by the time that my schedule actually caught up to me doing Kaiju stuff, it just ended up snowballing to all Kaiju stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point on, I just kind of rode that wave. And so for the last 4 years, 95% of what I do is just nothing but Kaiju tattoos. And, you know, at that point, collectors started seeing my stuff. People started traveling to get tattooed by me. People started asking me to travel to tattoo. And I did. And you know, that's kind of how it happened. And you know, that even in, you know, 2001, there were not, at that time, there were not a lot of people doing only Kaiju stuff. I mean, you could probably count on one hand the amount of people that were just kind of exclusively kind of focusing on traditional tattooing and Kaiju work. And so quickly I became one of the only people at the time that was doing it, you know?
Yeah. Which is like crazy to have that as like a almost like a branding, like you're one of the ones. And I mean, I hear about that kind of stuff where people are like, when are you coming to my city to tattoo? As if it's just a crazy, easy thing to do. It's like, well, I don't know. When you come to DesignerCon, I mean, people know you from your tattooing and stuff. Do they still like, hey, do you got time to tattoo me?
Yeah, people ask me all the time. I mean, every show I go to.
Wild.
People want me to tattoo. And look, I would love to.
Yeah.
But, you know, every show is different. Every situation is different, you know, and, I definitely can't travel to everybody's city that wants to get tattooed by me, you know, like, hey, align a shop for me to guest in, get 10 other people to get tattooed by me. I'll come to your city and tattoo you guys.
Mm-hmm.
But the cost of a flight and my travel and doing all this stuff, like, dude, I'd have to charge you $5,000 just to have me come there to do a tattoo on you. And like, you might as well just come to me. It's going to be cheaper.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, and it's like, it's, that's hard too. It's like, I understand not everybody can travel.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I'm just one person, you know, like, I am a father. I am a painter. I am producing my own toys and making my own toys. I am doing shows nationally and internationally now on top of tattooing. You know, and it's like, I paint all my own toys. Like, those aren't factory painted, you know, so it's like everything I do, I have my own hand on, I have my own hand in for the most part. So there needs to be 30 of me and there's just not, you know, so it's like, I can't tattoo everybody. I can't get everybody a Kaiju cream. I can't, I can't paint enough for everybody. I totally wish I could, like, there's, I just can't.
It is cool to see at DesignerCon to walk up and be able to see the Kaiju cream there, and then it's like within 30 minutes they're all gone. They're all off the table. At what point do we start making or getting into toys or figuring out how to do that?
So that happened around the same time as my pinched nerve.
Okay.
Because I was like, okay, what if this doesn't get any better? What if I literally cannot tattoo anymore? You know, yeah. I'm always trying to think worst case scenario, and then I'll work backwards. Mm-hmm. Like, that seems like a good idea. That way I'm not shocked when the doctor's like, your arm's going to fall off.
Yeah.
You know? And so at that time I was like, I'm going to have to go be a Walmart greeter, you know? And amen. Nothing against that, bro. Trust me, I've swept many floors. I've done it. Like I said, I've done it all, dude. I drove fork trucks. If I had to drive fork trucks again, I'd drive a fork truck. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? But because now I have a family to be responsible for, you know, but I was like, what are some things that I could use the skill set I have? I'm a tattoo artist. I design stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I tattoo stuff. But I have a good sense of color theory. I have a good sense of design,
yeah.
You know? And at that time, because I was drawing Kaiju Flash, I was like, man, I see people making their own toys. Like, how cool would it be to actually make a toy of my tattoo Flash? Like, I don't really know anybody doing that. At least not really in the Kaiju world at the time. And so I consulted my daughters,
mm-hmm.
you know, because just like I said, like I have an emotional connection to Godzilla and I was watching these films with my daughters. I was like, well, this is something they can, I want them to be a part of it too. If I'm going to do this, you know, and, you know, make something, I want to see what they think.
Yeah.
And so I showed them a couple designs and of course, like, you know, ice cream one, like, yeah, like everybody loves ice cream. Like, yeah. It makes sense. That I was like, you guys are like my managers, right? Like, and so I was like, okay, I'm what, you know, what's the worst that could happen? You know, like if I give it a shot and it fails, at least I can say I did it. Like mm-hmm. That was my only goal. I was like, just to be able to say that I did it. Like, how cool is that? To have my own toy, my own Flash, have it be Kaiju related, just seems like fun, you know. Yeah. So I talked to a couple clients about it. My clients are like, yeah, like that would be so cool, that design's so cool. And I don't really know how I found Last Bastion. I don't know if they found me or I found them, but it was around that time and I sent them an email and I was just like, I don't know how much this costs. I don't know how to even go about doing this. I don't know what it even requires of me, but this is what I have and this is what I want to do. And I sent them a picture of the Kaiju Cream Flash and I was like, I want to make this a toy.
Yeah. And they're cool as hell. So they rocked it.
Yeah. Yeah. These are awesome. I have a blank. Here,
he's a beauty.
Yeah, so I mean, so that was that. I honestly, when I made this toy, I never expected to go to conventions.
Yeah,
I thought that I would maybe have 100 made
mm-hmm.
max, and that I would just sell them at the tattoo shop, and you know, sell some through my Instagram because I was like, you know, like that would be cool. And then I talked to the guys and they said, I said, well, what do we got to do as far as coloring, you know? And they said, well, you can have a factory paint them. You can have someone else paint them. Or you could paint them yourself. I'd never used an airbrush before.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't want somebody painting my, I'm an artist. I can do this. I don't want somebody painting my stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to paint my own. Yeah. And, and I was like, I guess I got to teach myself how to airbrush. So my toy wasn't even made yet. Cause you know, that process can take up to 2 years sometimes. And it did. From the time I sent the email to the time I got my first one in hand, my first sample, that was 2 years almost. So I was like, well, I got time to learn how to paint. So I bought an airbrush, I bought a compressor. I started sitting outside and I didn't know anything about vinyl paint. I didn't know anything about paint Sofu yet. I bought some acrylics and I just started painting on skateboards.
Yeah.
Because I was like, this is just like tattooing. I just need to get the, you know, the natural feel of holding it. Cause I'm used to holding a machine like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not used to holding a, you know, a spray gun. So I was like, once I get used to that feel. So I was painting everything. I was painting statues. I was painting on paper. I was painting skateboards, whatever I could get my hands on to paint, just only to practice. Cause I was just like, I just need to put the hours in to get used to that hand motion and using it and all that. And so, and that's what I did. I taught myself how to airbrush so that when my toy came, I could paint my toys.
Yeah. Which is crazy. I mean, to have that forethought is incredible. And then to actually start doing it once it gets here, and then holding that first toy in your hand. I mean, whose expectation then was it that you go to Designer Con? Like when you had that toy, that first sample, were they like, hey, you need to come with us?
The first thing I ever did was G-Fest.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know how it would go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think anybody knew how it would go. People were really hyped about it. And, you know, I remember walking down the first morning, and even Wes was like, I know your toy's amazing. People are going to love it. But he's like, I just don't want you to be like upset if it doesn't sell out.
Yeah.
And he was just being honest. And I was like, totally valid.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had the first year, I think I had like, I don't know, maybe 15, 16.
Which is a crazy amount.
And that's a 3-hour paint. One of those is a 3-hour paint.
Yeah.
But it's not a quick paint, no matter what you do. I don't use any masks. I don't tape it. I don't do anything. It's all sprays. It's like, I don't know, 10, 12 different colors, depending on how I'm painting it. It's a lot of work just to paint one.
Yeah. Right?
So I had maybe 15, 16. And I think I sold out in like 20 minutes. Like,
damn.
If you've ever been to G-Fest and you know that line, and they can only let so many people into the dealer room at a time. So they'll let a flood of so many people and then they'll cap it. Dude, the whole flood of the first run of people hadn't even been in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sold out. And I was like, what do I do?
Yeah, you just sit there and say hi.
Yeah. So I did a lot of that. And you know, I kept one back for display, you know, and all weekend long people are like, is that one for sale? Can I buy that one? Where is this? How much is this? And after that, you know, I think that if I had any notion of attempting decon, people were like, that's your next move. You gotta do decon.
Yeah.
And, so I was like, okay. And that's when I did my first, you know, my first decon. And, you know, it's just kind of the ball has continued to roll ever since, you know.
Yeah, it's been rad seeing you there. And then this year coming back, you had a new piece that was on the table mimicking a rabbit's foot.
Lucky Kaiju Spine, yeah.
Yeah, and there was something that was interesting about that, and you'll have to like correct me if I'm wrong on this. You painted the inside of it. For some of them, right?
Yeah, I have some clears. So I, you know, what I started doing with Kaiju Cream is that I, you know, some I would paint just regular color vinyl, you know, and then you're like, oh, well, somebody wants something a little fancier, something a little cooler. And the cool thing about Kaiju Cream versus a lot of Sofubi is that it's two pieces. And it just creates a lot of big open space,
mm-hmm.
you know, and whereas many toys have a lot of texture and grit to them, if you paint them internally, you're not going to see maybe a big sweeping blend of different layers or different colors. But with this, I could get away with doing metallics and glitters and all kinds of, you know, swirls and things going on, because it's just a big open space and I can actually get the airbrush in there.
Yeah.
So I started painting a bunch of clears internally, just completely internal. And it came out amazing. So when I ended up getting Kaiju spines, I wanted to do the same type of thing. I wanted to do, you know, paint them with some fluorescence inside or put some glitter inside, you know, just have different effects. And I think, again, having two daughters, they're really into keychains and, you know, kawaii culture and cutie things and things that are fun. It just makes me, you know, because I'm around them all the time, then I think about, you know, what's a way that I can make this fun too, right? Yeah. Like, what's something just maybe a little bit outside the box, or, you know, maybe there's a kid at my table that wants one. Like, maybe they want one stuffed with pom-poms and glitter, you know, or maybe a grown dude wants one like that. I don't know. But so I try to, with every piece I do, I try to mix it up as much as possible, because, you know, I can only make so many, but two, I don't know. It's like, I don't want to just always do, I think as an artist, that's my drive. I don't want to always do the same thing. I don't want to just paint the same toy for 10 years.
Yeah.
And I don't want to just do the same color, like, you know, maybe five times over 10 years. I think I've done 20 some colors, maybe like 28 different colors of Kaiju cream. Some are one-offs, some are runs of three, some are runs of seven, some are runs of nine. But I'm always thinking about how can I push my painting? How can I, you know, because again, as a artist too, it's like I've fallen in love, I think, by this point with the painting of toys. Like I love to paint toys. If I could break it down to only doing one thing, you know, if somebody said you had to give up designing or making your own toys or painting or whatever, I'd probably choose to just paint, because I just,
yeah,
I love color. So much of it relates to tattooing and how I think about tattooing.
Walk me down this, because you have this new piece, this Godzilla on a flying saucer. And so walk me down that, because it like swings back to Attack Peter a little bit.
It does, you know, this thing touches on so many different levels. Again, that piece comes from Tattoo Flash that I made.
Yeah.
The flash for the Lucky Kaiju Spine, Godzilla UFO, and Kaiju Cream, those were all made maybe within the same month. Those were all designed within the same month in like 2001, which is crazy to me that now I have these three toys that are out there, and they're all from that same kind of just explosion of creativity in this kind of small infinite point. But so I'm personally, when it comes to collecting, I collect a lot of Sufubi and mostly that. And I'm really into weird sculpts. I'm really into bright colors. I don't want to see Godzilla how he looks in the film. I want to see somebody's artistic interpretation of him. I want to see, you know, different colors on him. The more you can push that contrast and kind of the psychedelic aspects, like, I just want to see it. Like I gravitate towards it. I do so in my tattoos and in my designing. So I do so in, you know, toys. So those designs all came out of things that I love and just reinterpreting them in a way they've never been done before. And Godzilla UFO was definitely that. You know, there's a whole series of toys where it's like, you know, characters on bikes, on the tricycle, right? then there's a whole series of kaiju in cars, right? Mm-hmm. Like stuff like that. And so I love those swords. I think they're fun. And I don't even know why. I don't know if I was watching Invasion of Astro Monster.
Yeah.
But I was like, man, why doesn't somebody stick Godzilla in a UFO? I don't know why, but, and I was like, I don't know if it's been done or not. So I just drew it. Let's see what it looks like. And again, it's one of those things, man. As soon as people saw the design, they just loved it. This is so cool. This is awesome. Okay, cool. And so after my first decon, I went, you know, I did my first G-Fest, then I did my first decon. Mondo approached me and they were like, we'd like to do a collaboration with you. We'd like to do one of your designs and we'd like to do that design. We just think it's so cool and it's outside the box and it's, that would be perfect for a collaboration. Mm-hmm. And that's how that came about. But yeah, when I first met Peter, he wasn't working at Mondo.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much Godzilla stuff he had done even when I first became aware. He had done some, I think. But that was still ramping up for him. He was still continuing to do more and more and more Godzilla stuff. And he wasn't at Mondo at the time. He was, you know, collaborating with them for Toho stuff, for Godzilla stuff. And so we became friends over this period. And, you know, he just always kind of championed me as an artist. He was like, you know, man, you would kill it with a license, or you'd be amazing because you're not just doing Godzilla, you're doing a new interpretation of Godzilla. You're doing,
yeah.
And honestly, for me as an artist, that's what I want. I want to see stuff that's never been done. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see the same Godzilla the 800th time, even the 800th time just in your way. Like, let's just do something different with Godzilla. Like, give him a fanny pack.
Yeah.
Like, why? I don't know. But, like, I've never seen Godzilla with a fanny pack, and I think it would be kind of funny. Like,
yeah,
do it, you know? I actually have a design of Godzilla with a fanny pack.
That's good. Say that. I'm glad you clarified that. Good job. Good job. Way someone doesn't take it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, this is like, sometimes I'll just sketch on whatever's around. Like, look, it's Godzilla with a fanny pack, you know? But, so, you know, it's just, that's how that came to be. That's how the idea for it is just, you know, thinking outside the box, thinking about what's something that would be cool, that I would want to buy, that I'd be like, man, if that existed, that'd be so amazing.
Yeah.
You know, but often I'm thinking about that in terms of tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about what would be a cool tattoo. And only now am I thinking, you know, about toys, because obviously that's what I'm doing. But at the time I was just thinking about Godzilla UFO, amazing tattoo, bro. Like,
yeah,
he doesn't want that tattooed on him for life.
Yeah. And I think it was cool just reading your post about it, of like, to be in on a license with them. And this is like the Everest moment. Like, you're able to do toys and paint and artistic stuff and do it with a license that you love. And so everything is just like falling into place on this one toy, which is really cool to see. And then seeing the pre-orders go up and people just like floored at like what it looks like.
Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah. And I really do. I have to give them credit. You know, my biggest concern going into it was just that there are people that know me inside of the kaiju world, and there's mm-hmm. people that don't know me. Right. There's a lot of people that don't know me, don't know who I am. And Mondo is obviously a much bigger, you know, they have a collectible market, so they're hitting people that I don't have exposure to.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for me, it's like, if, as an artist and as a designer and somebody who also paints, I don't want to do something that doesn't look like I made it.
Right.
You know, and they were really amazing. You know, they're like, we'll let you develop the colorways. We'll let you paint all the masters for the factories. And so every time, you know, a new variant comes out and people are excited about it, I'm like, awesome. Like, you know, to me, it's just another reflection of like, yeah, I got to paint it, you know, and that was my design. And I did the header art and, you know, my name's attached to it and it's all over it. Like, dude, that's the most amazing thing.
Yeah.
You know,
it is cool. With looking at all these things and being at different conventions and now having three toys out and in so many collectors' hands and stuff, what's next?
I don't know.
we're going to clip that right there.
No. I mean, obviously, like, I think you have to continue to grow, right? Like, you have to continue to get exposure if you want to make a living doing this, right? Like, people have to find who you are. I think for me personally, like, I would like to do more international shows.
Yeah.
I would like to get into the international market and travel a little bit more. I would like to get into sculpting because that's literally the only thing that I haven't done yet. So, you know, somewhere down the road, I would like to sculpt one of my own designs mm-hmm. and produce it. It's probably not going to be something, it's not going to be like a licensed kaiju or something. It's probably going to be my own weird random kaiju design.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd like to do that just because I haven't done it, not for any other reason, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm talking like, I'd like to hand sculpt it. I think, you know, like I like the I like holding a toy. I like the, you know, the tactileness of a lot of the 70s stuff and the patchy stuff and the, you know, I like the old texture and kind of grit to some of those toys. And I'd like to do something like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's rad. I can't wait to see what you start sculpting. I've seen sculptors come on and a good friend now sculpts with Mondo a lot, which is awesome. And he sculpts digitally and it's cool to see all that stuff. I'm just floored what people can create, either it's by hand or by digital sculpting or whatever, and what comes out of that. It's insane.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It's only getting better and faster and quicker. You know, for me as an artist, anytime I take on a new medium, there's a huge delay in my thought process because mm-hmm. I can't work as fast as my brain can in other mediums, right? So I can, as far as designing and tattooing, it's like I'm already there. I know what I want. I don't have to think about it. It took a long time for me to kind of port that into airbrush and getting to that point where it's like, oh, it feels natural to do this. And now I don't have to think about it. And my hand will do exactly what I want it to. And I know how much, I don't have to think about how much pressure I'm putting. I know how much pressure I'm putting.
Yeah. You
know? And I think jumping to sculpture is a huge, you know, kind of step back again. Not because I can't render something in 3D form. I just don't even have the skill set to do a lot of what I want to try to do, whether I'm doing it 3D or I'm doing it traditional sculpt.
Yeah. No, that's I love that. I'm going to screenshot that as one of the posts for this coming week. Yeah, that makes sense. And I think I'm always enticed. I haven't ever tried my hand at sculpting or anything, but I'm always enticed at the process and watching people do it and what it really takes to go through that. I mean, talking to people like Scott Hensey and seeing the work that he does or did, and it's just insane. It's insane that they have so much knowledge on it and so many years of just working with their hands like that.
Yeah.
It is and has been so good having you on the podcast. The last part is just a moment where you get to plug your stuff. Wherever you want people to go, whatever you want to talk about. And so we leave that for the artist. So plug away, man.
Well, currently you can find me on Instagram under Octeal Tattoo. You know, I think if people want to find me, they'll come get me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have more than enough people chasing down kaiju cranes that I can't, you know, meet the demands and stuff. And for a lot of my toys, it's like, you know, I take them to a show and mm-hmm. that's where they're available. And, you know, I don't make stuff available online unless I post about it. And, you know, I might do a drop a couple times a year and that's about it. But really it's just cause I don't have time to do that, you know? So,
yeah.
If you want to use me as an artist, you can contact me, DM me on Instagram. If you want a tattoo, you know, you can message me that way.
Yeah.
If you want to commission me to paint some stuff for you or do a run of your toys, like that's how you can find me. I just do everything through Instagram.
Awesome.
And, that's pretty much it.
Heck yeah. Octeal, thank you so much for coming on Toys on Tap.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's been fun.